This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Just like that, the second hour is here. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With you until 2 p.m. here on 104.5 The Zone. We are back at 6 o'clock, the 180 at 6, where we hit some of the best discussion from the day, recap the news, the best conversations, and we had a great one there with Coach Mack, of course, every Thursday with us, but also with Rod Graves, who is heading up the Fritz Pollard Alliance now. He was in the NFL offices on Park Avenue as an executive for several seasons, former general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, and throughout the time he's been a scout and everything else, but now he's the head of the Fritz Pollard Alliance. Doesn't do many interviews, and sent a great text during the break saying, great questions, best I've had throughout this process. So we'll have him on again at some point to go down memory lane, because I think there's a lot more to unpack with his backstory than the small amount of time we had today.
Well done, boys.
That's good.
And I think informative stuff there from an important voice in the whole deal, for sure.
And that's high praise coming from him also. So we appreciate that compliment on the questions. But his answers were very, very good. And as you said, Paul, very informative on the process and what needs to be done and really the thought process behind this new rule and what they're trying to encourage that received a very negative response publicly when this new rule was announced.
David Poile will join us today at 12:15. Chad, speaking of announcements, the NHL announcing their postseason plan. We will get into all of that from a Predators perspective. He was speculating on it a bit last week. I thought Poile did a tremendous job of answering our questions on the proposal last week, and he actually gave the information from calls. You could tell he was giving Paul us information on the calls he was having without telling us that, yeah, this is going to happen. He was saying, you know, I could foresee it being something that goes through September, and he mentioned the rosters and different things. I'm eager to pick his brain today about how that affects his team directly and some of the different layers to how you prepare for a tournament like this. That's coming up today at 12:15. There is Jadeveon Clowney news. Adam Schefter, yesterday afternoon, following the report that we brought up on the show, Paul, from
Charles Robinson, said the Browns have the most money. And then Adam Schefter came and said they offered.
Yeah, he went on a show in Cleveland Sports Talk Drive Time yesterday and was interviewed. It must be a weekly hit that he does. And he was asked about Clowney in that report. He goes, oh, yeah, the Browns have offered the most money, and he still hasn't signed, which is intriguing.
It's always very weird when it's a, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm on the radio in your market, and I'm going to say something here that would have been ticker worthy news. I mean, I don't see how that wouldn't have been at a slow time for NFL stuff, you know, first, if not, you know, on the news stack of NFL stories, by
maybe Shep- it had been reported, you know, the Browns have been connected with him. I've seen them mentioned in stories about Clowney's free agency watch. I never saw an offer mentioned.
Here's my thing, and I understand the reaction is like, ooh, burn. Jadeveon Clowney doesn't even want to go to Cleveland, like wouldn't even take. Is it dead? Like that he turned down the money now, does that mean? My sense is Clowney's not doing anything now, period. But does that mean, like, was there anything in this report that said that the Browns are dead to him?
Because I thought Adam Schefter followed up with a report that they are dead to him.
No,
he's not going to sign with Cleveland.
I didn't
he said
see
that they
that.
Have offered. He didn't accept the offer.
So the presumption off of that chat has been like he's dead to that. They're dead to him. But I could see Clowney, if what he wants is the biggest contract, when the time comes that he's ready to sign, which I think is going to be when teams are on the field again in camp, I could see it circling back and happening if what he wants is the most money and Cleveland's the team that offers him the most money if they circle back. And I could see the end of that negotiation having been, I don't want this now.
Yeah.
See, I read into that as they are dead to him And that story is out there because someone wants it to be known that Jadeveon Clowney is not interested in only money, because all that we've heard so far is about the money demands of Jadeveon Clowney. So that's something to me that gets leaked out there that says, hey, here's the Browns offering the most money, and he denied the offer. He declined the offer from the Browns with the most money. I see it, again, this is all up for interpretation. Certainly with the language in the story, he could then sign with the Browns later. But I take that as someone's trying to push the narrative that Clowney wants money, of course, but he's not just going to take the richest offer out there. He's trying to look for the best situation for him, and Cleveland is not that situation.
Here's the quote from Schefter on the show in Cleveland yesterday, and just full disclosure, it is WKNR in Cleveland. It is an ESPN station. He said, in regards to the Browns, I think they've been the most aggressive team with him financially, and I think he just balked at going to Cleveland for whatever reason. I think he's been hesitant to go because if he wasn't, he wouldn't have gone already. He would have gone already because it's the most money. It's the richest offer on the table. He hasn't taken it. There is no doubt that Cleveland has offered the most money to date. For whatever reason, he has not been willing to take it. That doesn't mean it couldn't change, but it hasn't changed just yet.
That says it's on the table, so it's not dead.
Well, the other offer
I think
heard,
the Titans have something on the table, and Seattle has something that remains on the table, indications are, right?
I think so. I mean, the last I heard from Seattle was like a month ago, where the reports were from a paper there that there was a 1 year, somewhere between $13 to $15 million offer on the table for him. I read that. I don't know if that's still the case after what they've done, but maybe there is. I do think there's another business approach to it, though, that I think favors the Titans, and that is you had your most successful year in the NFL with Mike Vrabel. And if you're looking for a one-year deal where you can become a $15 to $20 million player per year average, why not bet on yourself for 1 year in a reduced offseason year with someone you know, sign a one-year contract, and go get that money? I don't think that's a bad way to pitch the Titans' perspective here at all. And I think that's what they've been doing.
No, but I think that case has been hurt because the salary cap is very likely flat next year. Technically down, but then the league and the PA would work to make it stay flat because they don't want to see all their growth go to hell. They would borrow against future years, likely to keep it flat so as to not look bad and have things come apart where people are cutting people around the league because they can't keep up with the cap. I mean, if you averaged out what Schefter projected the cap would go down, I wrote this last week, and look at the Titans right now without Henry under contract, without Jonnu Smith, without Jayon Brown, without Daquan Jones, without Vic Beasley, we don't know what he is. If you averaged out what Schefter said the cap would go down next year with what the Titans have under contract, they'd have $6.6 million available next year. They've got to fix that, obviously, based on projections with limited or no fans next year. And that wouldn't be a great market for Clowney to go on a one-year deal on selling himself for next year when there's going to be not as much money as there is right now.
I don't want to be short-sighted on this because we are in Nashville. We cover the Titans. We're right here very close to this team. But really looking at this from above and looking at the different teams it's reported that are options for Jadeveon Clowney. Obviously, the offer from the Titans needs to be financially competitive with these other teams. I mean, that's something that has to happen. The finances of it have to make sense. But show me where another place is more desirable right now for Jadeveon Clowney that's out there. In terms of a team that is competitive to get deep into the playoffs, maybe go to a Super Bowl, playing for a coach where you had your most success that you know obviously believes in you, because John Robinson and Mike Vrabel are going hard after Jadeveon Clowney right now. They want him on this team. And I'm just logically looking at it and thinking, again, it's got to be competitive. But if the Titans are even close in terms of money, and if it's a one-year deal betting on yourself, which we think Jadeveon Clowney believes enough of himself to bet on himself, I don't think it's that close. I think the Titans are the best option for Clowney
right
now.
Close. Seattle's pretty good situation. Seattle is a good team that used him well last year. He wasn't as productive. He's hurt. And also Hutton saying the report is in the 13-15 range. I think the Titans would have trouble getting in the 13-15 range.
That was before they made some other roster moves,
right,
too.
Their roster's better without – they're in better shape without him than the Titans are without him. I think the Titans have more need for him, but they don't have as much money. I see what you're saying, Chad. This is a very appealing place for him, but I don't think it's so much more appealing than Seattle.
The Seahawks
and Cleveland, by the way, is pretty good situation. I mean, I know historically they don't get it done, but I think those three teams are bunched more closely than you're saying, and Seattle certainly is a good situation.
Seahawks just traded up to draft Darrell Taylor. The Seahawks, I think, believe that they're not getting Jadeveon Clowney. They are making contingency plans.
They've got better personnel up front.
Titans didn't draft a single edge rusher.
Agree with you there. Opportunity's better.
Coming up, we discuss the opportunity for Candace Story Lee, announced as the permanent AD, the interim tag removed at Vandy. She joined the wake-up zone, and our take on what she had to say next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Glad you're with us. And glad that Edley's Barbecue is reopening at their East Nashville location this coming Monday, June 1st. They're excited about that, as are we. They are hiring as well. If you're interested in joining the Edley's family with Will and Catherine Newman, who are great people, great friends of ours, but they'd be excellent to work for, edleysbbq.com/jobs is the website you can visit, edleysbbq.com/jobs, or you just swing by the Sylvan Park location in person this week, so today or tomorrow, and they will take your application in person there. They're hiring across the board at all of their locations, 12 South Sylvan Park in East Nashville, focusing first on the one that reopens in East Nashville on Monday. Earlier this morning, Candace Story Lee was on the wake-up zone. She joined 3HL last week as Vanderbilt removed the interim tag. Chad called it from the very beginning on the language of the press release that was issued to the media right after she was named the interim. The language and the quotes set it up to be the permanent AD, and Chad was right. He's like, this sounds like she's the permanent AD. That turns out to be the case. She has been invested within Vanderbilt Athletics. We wish her nothing but success with that position. But, Chad, you missed our conversation last week. Paul and I fall on the side of the tracks where we're thinking, we'll believe it when we see it. When we see support from the university, that's more than just putting some paint on a wall, and a true investment in athletics, that's when we'll actually raise our hand and say, yes, they have a chance of being successful. Until then, we didn't really see a point to say this is a great hire or not, because how can it be with any hire if you're not going to give athletic the support it deserves within the SEC and the money available to them?
Well, and based on what you just said, Hutton, in terms of see it, we'll believe it when we see it, and actually doing something as an institution and making that commitment. Candace Story Lee was on Wake Up Zone this morning. Mark Howard asked a question about that, and let's hear what she said.
Candace, there's no question about your credentials. There's no question about your ability. But how important was it upon you taking the job that you would be allowed the power to upgrade the facilities and not run into some of the roadblocks that I know you're familiar with that your predecessors faced?
No, it's a good question. I mean, I would tell you that I'm very careful to only speak from what I've seen as I've sat in the seat over the last few months and certainly a few days in the permanent role. And I can tell you that even in being asked to take over in an interim capacity, it was made very clear to me that this university values athletics and that together we're going to do some things that we've never done before. And so I definitely appreciate the question, because I know that there's skepticism in some pockets. And, I would never disrespect what people's experiences have been. I can just tell you what my experience has been in this short time is that we understand that we have a great opportunity as part of a great university, right, to use athletics as a platform. And our interim chancellor and provost, Susan Wincy, our incoming chancellor, Daniel Dearmeyer, our board of trust, my other fellow vice chancellors and just our campus community are really serious about this. You know, they're serious about this. We have an excellent university, and it's important that we have excellence across the board, including in athletics. And that's been not only been made clear to me, but there's consistent action behind that. And I know that that's what people need to see. They need to see consistency. And that's important to me. That's a priority for me. And so I look forward to just showing folks collectively, right, collectively as a university, that we're serious about this.
In terms of can't speak to anything before she was in that position, so can't speak to anything other than the few months she's been interim AD and now named the full-time AD, I think that's a very convenient cop-out for someone who's been in athletics at Vanderbilt for years and years under different ADs. If Philip Fulmer took that job and said, I can't speak about the 90s, even though I was here inside of it with all that success, then he would rightfully get criticized for saying that. I'm only going to talk about the last week that I've been the athletic director at Tennessee. That's all I can speak to, not my 30-plus years at the university. She is a Vanderbilt institution in that athletic department. She's been there as a player, went right into administration. She's been at different levels of it. She's seen it. She can answer questions as to what the problem's been with Vanderbilt administration athletics. I think that's a convenient cop-out. The other thing that jumped out to me, she said there is, quote, skepticism in certain pockets. It's the reverse. There is hope and optimism in certain pockets. There is skepticism everywhere. Everyone wants to see it, to believe it. Vandy fans, we'll open up the phone lines right now, and I guarantee you most Vandy fans say, I'm skeptical. That's not a pocket. There's hope in pockets. We can find a few people that are very optimistic about Candace Story Lee and Vanderbilt. And this is not a statement on her work, what she could do. I don't think she's proven because she hasn't been an AD before, so I'm not going to go as far as to say, you know, her credentials speak for themselves and she's going to be great. But the biggest issue that I have and many have is if you're trying to change the system and you're trying to make a deeper commitment to athletics in the Southeastern Conference, you don't go back to someone that worked in the administrations that didn't get it done before. And I'm going to use this example, and I want to open this up for phone calls, too, if people want to call in and comment and tell me where I'm wrong on this. 615-737-1045, 737-1045. Hardee's in the early 2000s, early mid-2000s, they had a big problem. They tried to do everything. They had fried chicken when I was in high school on the menu, right? They did all these different sandwiches. They experimented with different things. Stock fell. People stopped going to Hardee's. Then in the early mid-2000s, Hardee's decided, we're going to focus on what we know, the thick burger. They created the thick burger. They had ads with hot girls with sauce dripping all over them, biting into the burgers. And suddenly people started going back to Hardee's to get the $6 thick burger. And Hardee's stock rebounded. And everybody went with them because they were going in a completely different way. Okay? Now imagine if Hardee's, in the early mid-2000s, after all their problems, decided we need to do something different. And then they went and hired the sous chef of Hardee's that worked for the person that led Hardee's down a bad path and then tried to do the same thing but do it better or do it in a different way. Well, Hardee's wouldn't have been successful. So when we had Jordan Rogers on the show after this, former Vanderbilt quarterback, currently working with the SEC, he had nothing but nice things to say about Candace Story Lee. But he also said, this is a sad day because it's Vanderbilt just saying, we want to go with what we're comfortable with and we're not going to step out of our comfort zone. We went outside of our comfort zone with Malcolm Turner. He did some different things. We hated it. Again, maybe he did some things that weren't right. I'm not saying that could be true too. But we hated that different direction, so we're going to stick with what we know. Be Hardee's in finding the thick burger and something new, and a new way to do things, and thinking outside the box and moving forward, and don't continue to complete the same cycle over and over again. Because right now, Vanderbilt's relying on their success in baseball and some other non-revenue-driving sports, right? They need to become relevant in football and men's basketball more than anything else. And they need the commitment from the university to do that. I don't think making Candace Story Lee full-time AD is showing that commitment.
More still to unpack on that quote, including kind of the premise of the question and who actually holds the power. We'll get back into that Candace Story Lee Vanderbilt conversation next.
Midday 180, we are queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. At 12:15 today, Predators General Manager David Boyle will join us. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Edley's is committed to giving you the same great food in a friendly and safe way. They are excited to open their doors at a limited capacity. They also offer the same delivery options, and you can order through the Edley's app. You can also find them on Postmates, Uber Eats, Grubhub, or DoorDash.
With regard to Candace Story Lee there and the question she was answering from the Wake Up Zone, I think Mark Howard was doing a good job trying to dig in there. But this idea that she would have turned down the job if she wasn't given some assurances is nonsense. Candace Story Lee, under no circumstances, is not taking the athletics director job at Vanderbilt as a Vanderbilt person who went to Vanderbilt and who's been in the Vanderbilt athletics department for a career. She's taking that job no matter what. And the other thing I'm compelled to mention, she's the person we're hearing from, and she's the person we're going to hear from. But she mentioned, and I'm not even positive, the state of these things. There's a temporary chancellor now, and we're waiting for the chancellor to come in and all this. A lot of what she can and cannot do is all dependent on who those people in power, what their attitude towards sports is when they get there. The Board of Trust, which is assembled, and the new chancellor upon arrival. And I think, you know, we're programmed not to expect much of that person. That maybe it's a surprise and it's something different. More likely, we expect it to be the status quo. But we have to see. And that's not a Candace Story Lee issue at all. That's Candace Story Lee's boss. And anybody that's had a boss knows, you know, you can whisper stuff in the boss's ear, but the boss is going to make the boss's decision. And particularly at Vanderbilt, the chancellor's stance on sports isn't going to be influenced by much beneath the chancellor. The chancellor's coming in with a sports mindset, and it's probably not going to be great.
So Ja-El on Twitter writes in and says, wow, was not expecting to hear an attack on that lady that just got the job at Vanderbilt. Sounds kind of personal. We really need to redefine what attack means. If you thought that was a personal attack on Candace Story Lee.
So soft.
We said that she's probably great at her job. Paul, you just laid out the reason she would take the job. If I went to Vanderbilt and had a chance, heck, I didn't go to Vanderbilt. If I had a chance to be the Vanderbilt AD, I'd probably take that job too. That's not a personal attack on her. She's going to do the best job she can under the constraints of Vanderbilt. This is a statement about Vanderbilt and what that decision means. They went with a company woman, someone who had been there through different administrations, that had worked her way up the chain, and they went to someone different outside the box. It didn't work out, and they immediately went back to their comfort zone. The question we're posing is the Vanderbilt comfort zone what you want if you're a fan of Vanderbilt athletics? Or do you want a group that's going to take it more seriously and give more of a financial commitment? That is not a personal attack on Candace Story Lee. She seems like a very nice woman and very competent. It's nothing to do with that.
It has everything to do with the roller coaster, and maybe it's more like a merry-go-round of feeling like you have a sense of hope within the program, whether that's with David Williams, who sat in our studios for an hour, and we went deep into some of the storylines that had been reported that he was not allowed to approach certain donors. They were off limits to athletics. To the hiring process of Malcolm Turner, an outside-the-box hire who sat in our studios back in November and said he had not been told he was not allowed to approach certain donors or not. But he sat there knowing that his account had been capped. He had a spending limit as he sat there across from us that day. He never brought that up. And then he's gone. For whatever reason you want to point to, he's gone, and they go back to someone that's been within there and knows the quote-unquote Vanderbilt way, which is something that is just status quo and, at best, very neutral when it comes to athletics. And that's not us saying that. Here's former SEC quarterback Jordan Rodgers, now with the SEC Network.
Well, I'm not surprised, and here's why. It the problem is not Malcolm Turner. The problem will not be Candace Lee. And let me just start there. I love Candace. I think she is more than qualified for this job. She's a Vanderbilt woman through and through. She'll be the first female African-American AD in the SEC. I think it's unbelievable. I think it's great to have someone that can step in with her experience, with her character, someone that can guide this ship, absolutely. But Malcolm wasn't the problem, and Candace isn't the problem. The problem is this university. That's always been the problem. Why did James Franklin walk out the door to go to Penn State, who was under an unbelievable dark cloud of sanctions? Yes, it's another opportunity, but he was banging his head against the wall to get things that every other school, it's not even an issue. It's, oh, yeah, absolutely. It's guaranteed. It's things that every other school do. I mean, I had very private conversations with James Franklin about just how hard it was to get things done that every other school does. And so I imagine that Malcolm, you know, had a lot of real-world success. And he did have a lot of real-world success outside the box, which I was so happy that Vanderbilt decided to step outside the box and get somebody that thought different. But unfortunately, when you get inside this building, it doesn't matter how you think. It doesn't matter what your vision is. It matters who's signing the checks. And right now, the people signing the checks have a twisted reality of what it actually looks like to invest into a program.
And that is our point. And the point was made by former Vanderbilt quarterback Jordan Rogers with us right after we learned that Malcolm Turner was out as the AD and Candace Story Lee was named the interim. That's not an attack on Candace Story Lee. I think we all agree. We would love to see Vanderbilt fully invest in athletics because we'd have an SEC team in our program in our backyard that actually meant something. And right now it doesn't move the needle at all. That's our biggest issue is we can talk all day about what they want to do. We have seen no action. And the problem with that is if without the support from the university, they will stay in that rut. And yeah, some years they're going to be competitive in certain games. Maybe they pull an upset here or there, but they're not going to reach the level that they possibly could, specifically in basketball and football. Without the full commitment of the university. That's the sad reality of where they are, no matter who's running the program.
Something else that was very telling to me in that interview on Wake Up Zone, the next question from Mark Howard to Candace Story Lee dealt with what if there's a reduction in fans at games this year or no fans that are allowed, but the football season happens? And Candace Story Lee's answer was basically, doesn't really matter as long as there's football. And there's television money coming in. Well, why does it not matter at Vanderbilt? Because they don't have a lot of fans going to games anyways. The bottom line is, and she talked a lot about fan engagement and alumni engagement and everything else, Vanderbilt has a numbers problem at this point when it comes to fans. It's not just fans that are Vandy fans not going to games. It's total number of Vandy fans, period, anywhere. And they need to work on that. And how do you work on that? You show a commitment. There are fans that go to the games all the time that have been going for years that will continue to go. And there are some that have dropped off that aren't getting season tickets and aren't going to as many games. Look at the basketball attendance in recent years. It's terrible. Football attendance, terrible. So when she answers that question and says, it's not going to have a huge effect, you know, it's an effect but not a huge one, I'm thinking, well, yeah, it's not an effect at Vanderbilt as long as you're getting the TV money because you're not making nearly as much in ticket revenue for games. And that's something they have to address. And I'm not saying that's an easy fix, that they can just go and start adding fans all over the place, but you have to make the effort. And I think making the effort means making the financial commitment that leads to wins on the football field and on the basketball court. And when that starts happening, maybe you get some more Paul Kuharskis of the world that move in from different markets that'll start going to your games and become a basketball or football season ticket holder. But until then, you're going to have the same status quo, which, again, by this hire, that looks like exactly what Vanderbilt wants.
It's interesting we haven't hit on that. I mean, Vanderbilt spacing out fans is going to be spacing out Florida fans and Tennessee fans. And it's, I think, two biggest drawing games of the season.
I say this like with sympathy for their positions, because I can speak for the four of us. Imagine being in a role with Cumulus Media where six wins was deemed successful and you get a raise off of that. I mean, I would go home at night thinking I you can't win. Like I can't be, there needs to be more light at the end of the tunnel than just trying to climb up half the ladder. Right?
I don't know, though. There are a lot of people that would get satisfied with that, right?
You think, yeah, but that, hey, not
six wins. That's not the right. I'm getting raise off 6 wins. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's just being satisfied with being good, and right. That's not good enough. Like for my mentality, I would absolutely hate
good
it.
Enough for Derek Mason.
It's well, good enough. It's good enough well, for not Vandy necessarily, football.
Paul. He's trying to go to Colorado.
Yeah, I mean it's good enough for Vandy right now. But I'm with you, Hutton. I do think that James Franklin showed that what was good enough, you can expand upon that and do even better at Vanderbilt.
He's a fluke.
I don't think he's a fluke. I mean, I think they hired.
SC was down when he was there. The teams they beat weren't that great. What's the best 3 wins he had during his time here? I'd have to go back and look.
The SEC East has been down with Derek Mason as well.
I know. But and Vandy's gone back to what it was to a large degree, right?
Well, here's my point. Regardless of what state the SEC East is in, if you're at Vanderbilt, and Jordan Rogers talked about this openly, look at Kentucky. Look at what Mark Stoops has built at Kentucky. And people say, what has he built? Well, he won 10 games.
Yeah.
And he's saying there's no excuse not to do the same thing at Vandy. They're at even a worse recruiting disadvantage at times at Kentucky. And they invested in facilities. They let a coach hang around. They invested in a good coach, seeing it through to the end. You could do the same at Vandy. And when they hired James Franklin, he was maybe the coach in waiting at Maryland, but maybe not. I think they kind of pulled back on that offer. He was an offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator at Maryland. You can go find a diamond in the rough that can be a really good coach at Vandy. It's not a fluke to find a good coach.
And listening back to what Candace Story Lee in the cut we played from the Wake Up Zone, when we come back, let's chat about what would surprise us if she's able to do X. What would surprise us? Midday 180, queued up by Ellie's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. In our discussion of Candace Story Lee, what would we deem successful? And we're not saying in 2 months, in a year, but I think we're all going to have a similar answer, I think. And I think the investment from the university will surround that football stadium. If we have them hypothetically playing a couple of seasons at that soccer stadium in order to revamp Vanderbilt Stadium, is she actually getting more done than what we thought she would, or is this already in the works? Do we believe that?
I'm not going to throw a ticker tape parade if suddenly an announcement just a few weeks after she's hired officially is made that they're going to do something with the stadium, because, like you said, I think that would be something that was in the works for a long time that's just getting announced to give some momentum for her. You raised the question, what would surprise you, would shock you, right, into thinking, man, this is something that could be different. I'm not advocating for this because I'm uncomfortable just saying they should do something. But what would surprise me about Candace Story Lee? Firing Derek Mason midseason if they get off to the same start they did last year. Making a change at football coach early or even after the season. If they have another year like this one, firing the head football coach would surprise me. Firing Jerry Stackhouse if it's not any better this year. Something that bold and forward-thinking would surprise me, right? That would not be the status quo. And people are thinking, well, okay, if Derek Mason goes 3-9, you know, or doesn't win an SEC game or wins one SEC game this year, they won one SEC game a year ago against Missouri, if he repeats that feat again, then it wouldn't be that shocking for the coach to get fired. But at Vanderbilt, it kind of would, right?
How'd you phrase the question, Hutt?
What would surprise you? Like, we're sitting here saying we have no faith in that position because of everything going on above that position. So if she's able to get if she gets something done or does something within her role other than just be, you know, the point person for the university when it comes to athletics, you know, athletics over here kind of scenario, what would surprise you with that program doing something other than baseball? Because baseball will always be at that level as long as Coach Corbin is there.
Yeah, well, what would surprise me, I'm going to spin off, is if Daniel Diermeier comes in on July 1st and becomes a chancellor that has a different view of sports than his predecessors, and puts Candace Lee in a different position than David Williams was put in, then Malcolm Turner was a failure from the start. It just didn't work. It was an interesting idea to go outside the box, and then they went outside the box with the wrong person. But to me, it's on this new chancellor who starts on July 1st to be the agent of change and to give her some power to do some things that her predecessors haven't been in power to do.
Here's what will surprise me, and it's if Vanderbilt Athletics, specifically football, let's just go football to nail it down here for me. If it not for the radio show, not for the air, not for calls, if it's just brought up as a point of random conversation in our day-to-day life of going out and doing events or talking with people, if they say, hey, what do you think about what Vandy did today? That will surprise me, because that has not happened in a long time where people are actually excited to bring up Vanderbilt in conversation. Other than
outside
the negative
of,
tone that we
baseball.
Bring and the real tone that we bring when we discuss this, and we've said it to specifically, we've said it to the 80s and the positions prior. I'll be surprised if it becomes more of a household discussion from just a day-to-day conversation for sports fans, because right now it is a lethargic non-factor.
Outside of baseball.
Well, Calvin on Twitter, speaking of baseball, says, how can the baseball team be so good, nationally known, and have top-notch facilities and the other sports do not? And my response to that is because the baseball program is run by Tim Corbin and not Vanderbilt University. Yes, they're in conjunction with each other, but wouldn't you guys agree that Tim Corbin is the athletic director of Vanderbilt baseball and that he's one getting the job done with personal contributions from former players and donors and everything else? He's the one taking the bull by the horns and doing that, and you need that Tim Corbin in other sports. It's shown that. James Franklin showed that. James
Hire
Franklin
Tim
had to
Corbin.
Do things at Vandy.
Hire CEOs for sports.
But
they
retain them.
That way.
Yeah, the problem is retaining them, because James Franklin's the classic example. Think of the things James Franklin had to do from a marketing standpoint that he does not have to do now at Penn State, because they have people doing that for him. And you don't have to, because you don't have to have the commitment from a community, because that community already exists at Penn State and it's not going anywhere.
True. At football, it's a lot harder because it's a lot bigger. But every other sport, you can probably do it. And I think Tim Corbin would say, hey, I've got a level of autonomy here that's a lot better than a lot of universities, where I'd have to do more answering and I couldn't be as independent. Wouldn't you rather be a basketball coach? In a lot of ways, at Vanderbilt, if you could get it rolling,
yes,
and you had your budget and you had your alumni coming back and giving you money and everything, and you were kind of over there and you didn't answer to the athletics department the same way, that sounds pretty good. If Jerry Stackhouse could do that, or Jerry Stackhouse's replacement, and you get the alumni going and coming back, and it's small, it's even smaller than Corbin's thing, that sounds pretty good.
Absolutely. I mean, and the key there is finding the right coach that can earn that autonomy. Would it surprise you guys if Derek Mason was fired for anything on field this year that wasn't some sort of scandal?
How long is the contract now?
Well, I think a big part of that buyout went down now that he's going into this year, but it's still going to be a pretty sizable buyout.
No, Chad, you're right. I would be surprised. I mean, if I'm
just making sure I'm not crazy, because I would be – that would something that – what would surprise me? Candace Story Lee making a change and firing a football coach because of on-field or lack of on-field results.
Here's my football request. No more extensions. Let the buyout drip down. Let the contract approach its term.
But again, like we're talking now about Derek Mason, when, you know, I'm simply saying it's everything's above that athletic department. That's the problem with those issues. I'm sympathetic with what he's working with as well. It's not just can he coach or not. There are, especially in the SEC, trying to keep up with everything else that's going on and being built around you, and you play in that dump, and you're recruiting to that. I mean,
agree. But he can do his part better.
You're selling the degree, and you get a chance to develop 2- and 3-star recruits, sometimes the 4-star recruit that's coming in. But beyond that, like, it is a steep climb.
He could do his part better, though.
615-737-1045, our number. Your calls coming up to kick off the hour. David Poyle will join us in about 17 minutes, the Predators GM. And coming up, David Reed has the headlines for you across the sports world. Midday on Eddie, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.